Pitch to Bellinger. He swings and he hits a high fly ball right center field. This ball's gone!
Now a 3-1 for Acuna. Swinging a high fly ball! Deep to left field! Way, way back! It's gone!
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
We've made it to the end of the week, and we're just 5 days away from pitchers and catchers reporting. See, that's the great thing. I know it's sad we don't have football until August, but we move out of football, and we basically move right back into baseball. And there's still a lot of intriguing storylines that really have no conclusion yet in the big leagues. We're going to talk about that and more right now with our next guest, Steve Bordstein, great friend of mine, great friend of the show, joins us periodically to talk Major League Baseball and horse racing, a variety of different topics. Steve, as always, it's a pleasure to get you back on. Thank you.
Very happy to be here. Thanks for the time.
Oh, definitely. I know one of the storylines that did reach its conclusion since the last time we spoke, Trevor Bauer. He's now officially a Los Angeles Dodger. He had his presser yesterday.
It was a little, I guess we've become so accustomed now in this day and age to, you know, really microscopically investigate everyone's press conference, whether it was Bryce Harper's. Remember when he moved over and, you know, everyone kind of, you know, we examined, like, we did a prostate exam practically on his press conference when he became a member of the Phillies. And we're kind of doing the same thing a little bit with Trevor Bauer's a little bit. It was a little disconcerting from time to time, but I don't get the impression, and I base this on experiences that I've read about from reporters, whether it was with his time in Cincinnati, even with his time very briefly with Arizona. I never got the impression that Trevor Bauer is a bad teammate. I get the impression that Trevor Bauer is an uber-competitive guy who is very much interested in seeing that kind of uber-competitiveness from the rest of his organization, whatever organization that is. And he doesn't have time for the nonsense and the drivel that everyone else seems to want to make time for. And that's just who he is, and I'm okay with that. Someone equated his press conference, Trevor Bauer's, with the one with the impromptu thing that happened to Randy Johnson when he became a member of the Yankees, and he started yelling at a Yankees fan who wanted to take a picture of him on his way to his introductory press conference. Those two things are so completely and diametrically opposed to one another. Randy Johnson was a poison pill by that point. Everyone kind of thought he was a poison pill by that point in his career. I did not see that from Trevor Bauer. I don't think Trevor Bauer's that guy.
Well, this is my take on press conferences, and this goes back to NFL coaches. Adam Gase is going to be a meme forever because of his press conference. What can we gauge from them? Nothing. Okay, absolutely nothing, because I've covered enough press conferences, local all the way up to the national level, if we're talking NBA, minor league baseball. Steve, I know you've done the exact same thing. Here's the bottom line. These press conferences are a minuscule moment in comparison to the deep, thorough studies and logistics that the front office personnel go over before making these hires or signing these players. It's minuscule in that realm. I take nothing from them whatsoever. Nothing.
And I mean, and it's not just the introductory press conferences, right? There's also the post-game press conferences. Remember how viral Cam Newton's press conference became after the Broncos beat the Panthers in the Super Bowl several years ago, and everyone tore into Cam Newton because he didn't answer questions and he was upset and he got vocal from time to time with reporters. Well, if you were in that room at that time, and as we later all found out, like 20 feet away from him, in an adjoining part of that same room where Cam Newton was doing his press conference, were members of the Denver Broncos defense, which had essentially just wrecked his year in the course of 3.5 hours. So how would you feel in that situation when you can overhear someone else's press conference in which they're basically describing every way in which they just wreck your day, and then you have to do a press conference to pretend that's not happening? So they all need to be taken in context. Trevor Bauer's needs to be taken in context. And to your point, Jordan, it's very accurate. It's a microcosm. I am not going to remember, well, if the Dodgers go on to win 95, 96 games next season, I am not going to go back and go, yeah, but there was that damn press conference that really just, you know, that just chaps my hide. I'm not going to do that.
No, absolutely not. By the way, the Cam Newton, that press conference was funny. I still to this day, I laugh over that. It was.
Kevin's was hilarious.
It was the way that guy acted throughout the entire year. No, it was funny. Again, Steve Bornstein, our guest right now as we talk Major League Baseball and some of the storylines that that have dropped. Let's talk about another one, and that's the designated hitter leaving the National League. I was thrilled when this came down the pipe, Steve. I'm not a big fan of the DH, and to be honest, I'm fine with it in the American League. I like that the two leagues differ. And I'll tell you one other aspect. This may sound really weird, okay, but with the DH making its way into the National League, the Cy Young didn't mean as much to me last year from the National League side of things. And I know that's weird because they don't. There's no tie-in there. It doesn't matter what a pitcher does at the plate. But I just felt like, okay, you know, and it was Trevor Bauer. I guess we can tie it into it. But he was a 50% player last year because he didn't have to bat. It kind of ruined it for me.
And I think also, I mean, we've forgotten that the only reason the DH existed in the National League last year was because it was one of several rule changes that were being made because of the shortened season. It was MLB's desire to protect the pitcher in every way, shape, and form. So going with the same rule that has existed for, what now, nearly five decades in the American League was the universal DH rule. And I'm glad that they decided to opt away from it, and I think it also points a big, big arrow at why the Dodgers might not have been so persistent in going after hitters in this free agent season during the so-called winter meetings, what have you. Why didn't they do that? Well, because they had a feeling maybe that the DH thing might not be there. And by going after Bauer instead, you lock up the Cy Young winning pitcher. Now, to your point, maybe the Cy Young doesn't mean as much. I think it still did. I think the mentality of a pitcher is such that the hitting is a distraction, right? You know, I have to go up to bat. Oh, it's a pain in the ass, whatever. You know, but I don't think the Cy Young was any less meaningful because there was no batting by pitchers in 2020 in the National League, nor do I think that their efforts were any less important. So I'm glad we have the designated hitter off the table for the National League, simply because, again, it reestablishes tradition. You and I think, are both the same way. I'm a traditionalist. I'm much older than you, but I like tradition. And tradition means a lot to me. So going back to the tradition here is a good thing. And I know that, you know, there are certain pitchers in the National League, Clayton Kershaw being one of them, who kind of enjoy the batting thing. They do get it. They do kind of enjoy it. So I'm glad we're going back to the original. I'm excited that it won't exist this year because it does create, it creates that element for managers, coaches, and trainers to make sure that, hey, you know, we can't really have this guy go that deep in the end. And that's going to be the question also is, does that also change some of the rules as it goes with pitchers and their availability late in games? Are we still going to have, you know, a guy has to go through, a guy has to get out of an inning, a guy can't just come in, get one guy out in the National League like we did last year? You know, we have to have a guy go three outs. And so are some of those rules in game going to change with pitchers?
Yeah, I'll take it one step further as far as the strategy of the game. Go back to last year and let's look at Dave Roberts, a manager that has been just completely ripped apart by the Los Angeles and national sports media, and maybe rightfully so prior to last year's World Series championship. Go back to Brian Snitker. Let's look at Jace Tingler. Okay. How much easier was the game for these three managers, knowing the depth that they had at position for position players with a designated hitter? I mean, it was monumentally easier, right? And so all the shortcomings of Dave Roberts over the last 3 years, I think those were minimized by giving him a designated hitter. And I look at the San Diego Padres this year, to your point about the way that the Dodgers didn't really approach bats, knowing that there was going to be no DH. Well, the Padres went completely opposite of that.
Right.
And when you look at that lineup... Exactly. And when you look at that lineup with a Will Myers... Or what about Cronenworth, who I thought should have been the National League MVP the National League Rookie of the Year, to begin with? When you look at the other bats that they have added, that's a problem for Tingler.
Oh yeah, Absolutely it is, because they just essentially became a much better version of the Colorado Rockies, right? I mean, they're that team now. They've got some pitching, but we still don't know the status of Clevinger. He's probably going to miss all of 20. He's going to miss all of 2020. LeMay is still kind of a question mark. So we don't know the status of those guys. Yeah, you've got a ton of bats, but you don't have a whole lot of depth in pitching. You're going to need that depth in pitching. Maybe not the first month of the season, maybe not the first 60 days of the season. But by the time August and September roll around, that lack of pitching depth is going to come out badly for them.
Again, our guest right now, Steve Bordstein, joining us to talk Major League Baseball. Steve, let's talk free agency because, again, pitchers and catchers, they will report in 5 days. Trevor Bauer, Marcell Ozuna, Nelson Cruz, those were the latest wave of the premier players that got deals. I mean, George Springer, JT Realmuto, DJ LeMahieu, they have already signed. So you look at who's left, and there's still a lot of talent out there. And we can start with Dodgers third baseman Justin Turner. I believe he re-ups with L.A. eventually. And Andrew Friedman did say in the press conference yesterday with Trevor Bauer that the Bauer signing would not impact the possibility of re-upping Justin Turner. I have to believe the only reason why they haven't re-upped him yet is because they're apart on the length of the contract. You also have two National League teams that are in on Turner that you have to be aware of, the Milwaukee Brewers and also the New York Mets. Two locations where he could make a big impact, especially in New York if he was to return to the Mets. Your thoughts on Justin Turner?
My thoughts on Justin Turner are that he will re-sign with the Dodgers, and my thoughts on Justin Turner is, with all the youth that's on that Dodger organization, Edwin Rios and all the depth they have, Will Smith, the young players on that team. How ironic is it that it's a 36-year-old third baseman that's the guy that's the last, you know, sort of piece of the puzzle here? I'm okay if Turner doesn't re-sign. I think he will, but I'm okay with it if he doesn't. I think Edwin Rios will be able to step up to that challenge. Don't forget it was the home run that he hit in that monumental first inning, I believe it was, in the National League Championship Series where he stepped up and had a great postseason. I think he's ready for this role, but I also think that he'll benefit by having a guy like Justin Turner in the clubhouse. And you and I were having this conversation earlier, is who's the guy in the clubhouse if it's not Turner, if you don't re-sign Turner? And you brought up a name that I hadn't even considered. I was thinking about guys like Chris Taylor, guys like Cody Bellinger, maybe even a newcomer like Mookie Betts. You brought up A.J. Pollock, and I thought that was brilliant because he and Justin Turner, kind of the same guy, cast-offs from different teams that bounced around a little bit and found a home in L.A., and I think Pollock would be that guy.
Yeah, I do, too. Let's take a look at the best starting pitcher that is still available on the market. Again, Bauer's gone. But if you look at even Tanaka, Marcus Stroman being signed, Steve, I really believe that at this point in time, it's got to be James Paxton. I don't know that there's a better pitcher on the market than Paxton right now. And there are a few teams out there that still need pitching help. We can talk about the Mets, the Phillies. What about the Cardinals? They've been very active. The Blue Jays, we can stick inside the National League West. Not thrilled with what the Giants have as far as the pitching rotation. I know that there's a risk factor here, but I think when you look at the ceiling, I am a little surprised that Paxton doesn't have a home at the moment.
I'm surprised Paxton doesn't have a home at the moment, and I do think some of the teams you mentioned there, particularly San Francisco, would benefit from having Paxton there simply because he does put some stability in what otherwise is a very unstable San Francisco Giants organization. You put a guy like him out there, I think he'd be a natural fit there. I think he's clearly the best pitcher available right now, but how much money is that going to cost someone? Because again, when you go from the Yankees, there seems to be this idea that you're going to have to overpay for someone from the Yankees, right? I mean, that's kind of the rule. If you're going to get someone from the Yankees, you're going to pay a lot of money to get him away from the Yankees. So I don't know if the amount of money that's available to these teams now, the amount of revenue that was brought in, that's been generated, are they going to, you know, what team's going to be able to spend that money? Because once you're a Yankee, then you automatically become part of that overpriced club where guys are going to spend an awful lot of money for a guy from the Yankees just because you wore pinstripes for a year or two.
And I feel like you could really put together a solid team right now just by hitting the open market. I mean, Jake Arrieta, Rick Porcello, Trevor Rosenthal, there are some arms still available. You know, you can go even deeper than that if you want some relief pitching. What about Mark Melancon? What about Rich Hill? What about Shane Green? These guys are all free agents still, and pitchers and catchers report in 5 days. Then if you go to the position players, yes, my friend Yasiel Puig is still available as well. I think he may have played his last. I think, knowing that Jackie Bradley is still on the open market as well, I think it's safe to say that Puig has probably played his last game in Major League Baseball, at least for a while.
Yeah, I can see him. You know, he'll attach himself to what's left of the minor leagues right now. He'll attach himself to a Triple-A squad, and someone's going to call him up eventually. And he'll be that early season call-up guy that's going to get some at-bats. I could see a team like the Mets going after him, because the Mets are they're like a holiday on parade sort of thing over there. They like guys like that who are going to get headlines, they're going to sell jerseys, whatever. And it's a shame because I know your sort of weird love affair, I guess, for lack of a better term, with Yasiel Puig. I get it. I'm so glad that the Dodgers don't have to deal with him ever, ever, ever again.
Well, Mookie Betts helps soothe that pain. Yeah. You know, that's that Mookie guy. He's pretty good. He's pretty good out there in right field.
I want to get your take on something really quick, and I know we're running short on time. The take on the official game baseball now. Now that it's going to be a dead ball now. Does that matter to you at all?
I love defense. I love defense in any sport we're talking about. I'm fascinated by pitchers. I'm fascinated by defensive schemes and defensive coordinators in the NFL. I love low-scoring basketball games. So you want to bring me a dead ball? Please do. I'm there for 2-1 games, Steve. I love them.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Like, this doesn't bother me. Like, I know a lot of people are fascinated by, you know, the high-scoring games. And to me, that's sloppy baseball. Like high-scoring games to me are boring, right? I don't care for them. Like, I loved I still remember game 6 of the World Series. It was 3-1. It was 1-0. You know, and then all of a sudden it was 2-1 and 3-1. I'm like, oh, this is the greatest thing ever. Because I don't want a game that's decided in 6 innings, and I don't want a game that's decided 15-11.
Right.
Be a 3-1 game any day of the week. So if you're going to take a foot or two off a 375-foot line drive, if you're going to take a foot or two off that, and maybe that's a great catch at the wall, then that gives me more opportunities and gives us more opportunities to watch Cody Bellinger and Mookie Betts make great plays at the wall again.
Absolutely. I'm here for it. Definitely. Steve Bordstein, again, our guest right now. Steve, it is always a pleasure to get you on the show. Before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
Got a big race coming up this week, actually tomorrow, out in Louisiana, the Risen Star Stakes, featuring a New Mexico-based trainer. I live in New Mexico, right near southwest Colorado, so kind of excited about the Risen Star Stakes tomorrow. Got a preview online at horseracingnation.com. You can also find it by going to my Twitter page and follow me there at Radio Durango SB.
Steve, always a pleasure. Look forward to doing it again, hopefully next week.
Looking forward to it, my friend. Thank you.
Let's pause for another quick commercial break. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.